Well, as most of you know, I've been away on vacation. So the first day back, I get to the office and I decide to look up the readings for this Sunday. And I was thinking, first week back, hopefully it's something nice and one of those readings that's easy to pull sermon material from. You know, something like John 3:16. For God so loved the world that he gave his only son. You know, one of those passages that people love, that we can all agree on, that we can all get behind. And so I sat down, pulled out the Bible, and I only had to read the first verse from today's gospel. And Pharisees came up and in order to test him, asked, "Is it lawful for a man to divorce his wife?" This isn't John 3:16. And do you know who I blame that on? The fact that my first preaching day back, I've got this contentious passage. That's right, the Pharisees. You see, the Pharisees are trying to throw Jesus curveballs. Whenever they ask something, whether it's about taxes or the resurrection, they're not asking Jesus something wanting an honest answer or wanting to learn from him. They're asking Jesus questions because they figure he'll give one of two standard answers and upset half the people listening to him. Unlike some of those other questions like, whose wife will she be at the resurrection? The question we hear today is one of the questions that can still upset and provoke people. And you see, the context at this time, law in the Roman Empire wasn't exactly like law in the United States. When it came to non-criminal law, there were multiple, oftentimes competing systems. Most Jews would go to the Pharisees and ask them to interpret matters with Jewish law. Jewish law allows a man to divorce his wife. And listen to those words very closely. It doesn't allow divorce as we generally know it today. It allows a man to divorce his wife. That's still the way it is with more conservative Jewish groups today. There are even situations where a woman may want to get a divorce. She may have a husband who's abusive or who cheats on her, but only the husband can divorce, and he won't give her one. In Hebrew, they have a term for that even. They'll refer to a woman like this as aguna, or chained. To top things off, the Jewish law at this time, a man doesn't even need his wife's consent for any of this, and he could divorce his wife at the drop of a hat. The Pharisees aren't asking about something that's fair. The husband is holding all the cards here. Other people, since they lived in the Roman Empire, would divorce under Roman law. And Roman law would let the husband or the wife divorce. And then just to go as far as possible, you also had Greek law, which would let the husband, the wife, or the wife's father initiate divorce. If you're listening and you don't like your son-in-law, just an FYI, Greece stopped this centuries ago. So at this time, these systems are kind of competing in this part of the Roman Empire. In a way, when the Pharisees ask Jesus, "Is it lawful for a man to divorce his wife?" what they're asking is, which one of these legal systems are you siding with? Where do you get your interpretation of the law? Are you with us or not? And like render to Caesar, Jesus doesn't give them an answer they're expecting. They're expecting Jesus to come down hard on the side of one of those options I've mentioned. But instead, Jesus points to the bigger problem here. You see, the whole understanding the Pharisees are showing is that marriage is this legal construct, kind of like a legal contract. They're asking Jesus for a legal opinion, something you'd pay a lawyer for. They're treating marriage like it's a creation of man, something that mankind can bend and twist whatever way it wants. The Pharisees don't see Jewish marriage as something coming from God. In the passage, they see it more as something coming from Moses. For the Pharisees, Moses is the one who laid the groundwork for marriage here. But Jesus' answer is really radical because he doesn't give them a legal opinion. He's telling them, no, marriage isn't from Moses. Marriage is something that goes back to the very beginning. God made them male and female. This isn't something that man invented and man can tinker with. It's something God initiated and something that we are made for. That's what we get in our passage from Genesis, the background about what Jesus is talking about. Adam is created with a desire for God in his life, the same way all of us here are. But Adam is also created with a desire or a need for a companion. God himself says, it's not good that the man should be alone. Then we get the creation of all kinds of animals trying to fill that role as a companion for Adam. Now, when we read this, we need to bear in mind God is all-knowing, and God exists outside of time. It's not like God then decided to put Adam through a trial and error process to find a companion. God knew who Adam's companion would be. He knew the only companion that would be fitting for Adam. I think part of the reason for the section with the animals is a reminder that as much as we may like animals, like our pets, they can't fill our need for a companionship like a spouse does, like another person does. And we see this in so many other areas of our life as well. We may think we can do things alone, that we're better off alone, but we're not. John Donne, the 16th century Anglican priest and poet, described this by writing, "No man is an island entire of himself. Every man is a piece of the continent, a part of the main." And so to fill this role, to bring about that goodness, God creates Eve. And I love this part here because finding this companion, finding he's no longer alone on earth, it fills Adam with so much joy that he bursts into song. That's why it's marked a little differently in the reading. "This at last is bone of my bones and flesh of my flesh. She shall be called woman because she was taken out of man." Adam is filled with joy because he's no longer alone. He has someone he can share his life with. Eve brings him out of that isolation. It's beautiful. So the Pharisees are trying to pin down Jesus on this legal question. Can a man divorce his wife? And Jesus is pointing not to the breakup of a marriage, but to the formation of marriage. He's reminding the Pharisees not of what Moses said. He's going back to what God intended for marriage. The Pharisees want to talk about death and Jesus' life. That's what Jesus is trying to convey at the end of this passage. He says, "So they are no longer two but one flesh. What therefore God has joined together, let not man put asunder." In the same way that when the Pharisees ask if it's okay to pay taxes to Caesar, and Jesus responds, "Render to Caesar the things that are Caesar's," this isn't a clear answer for the Pharisees. It's even unclear to Jesus' disciples, so much that later in this chapter, they have to pull Jesus aside and ask him the question again just to get a definite answer. Jesus is getting even farther from the Pharisees' talk about divorce as this legal debate. And he's making a profound statement about what marriage actually is. Even more than a state of life created for us by God, it's something that God shapes us into. And that's still a problem when this issue comes up today. When divorce comes up as a topic, people usually take sides and start arguing about the morality of divorce, just like the Pharisees. Some say divorce is okay, some say it's not. Jesus doesn't want to give that quick answer. Jesus wants to take us back to the marriage itself. He wants to bring us to a fuller understanding of marriage. And he knows that when we have that understanding, then we'll know about divorce. And why is Jesus so worked up and excited about marriage? Despite what certain Tom Hanks films may try to tell us, Jesus himself was never married. Well, we get the reason for his interest later in the New Testament from Paul. Paul echoes Jesus' teaching here in Ephesians by writing, "For this reason, a man will leave his father and mother and be joined to his wife, and the two will become one flesh. This is a great mystery, and I am applying it to Christ and the church." Jesus doesn't have a wife, but he has a love stronger than anyone can equal for us, for the church. Christian marriages, like other marriages, may have ups and downs, but they should reflect something of the love between Christ and the church. In the tumult and chaos of the world around us, Christian marriages should be like beacons or lighthouses of God's love. That is why Jesus gets so excited about marriage. No other institution is held up in this light compared with our loving relationship with God. It speaks to how we should approach marriage, and it speaks to us about how strong God's love is for us and how we ourselves should respond to that love. So, yes, this passage starts out in a pretty dour place, the Pharisees challenging Jesus on divorce. They think they've got Jesus tripped up in a legal debate about legal interpretation. What Jesus does, though, is redirect this away from legal decisions to that original purpose of marriage, what God intended. He shows that marriage is from God. It's something that ideally changes us, not something we can change. And when I say marriage changes us, I do mean us, including myself, the single priest who's up here preaching to all of you about marriage. That's because marriage is this loving relationship humanity is called to, and Jesus uses Christian marriage to show what love can look like. God has joined together the married couple, and in marriage, he continues to work to join them closer and closer together, not only to themselves, but to himself. And he does this not only with that couple. God uses marriage to show everyone what his love for us is like. This passage starts out with the Pharisees showing Jesus a divorce, a death. But like what happens later in the gospel when his enemies give him death, Jesus shows them life and in abundance. Amen.